Our service this morning will be different from the norm in that we will not have a sermon, but rather voices from our children and congregants on this month's theme of wholeness. But before that, I have a few announcements. First, we ask that you please silence your cell phones. After the service today, you can enjoy refreshments and a welcome from Village 8 during our coffee hour in the dining room. You may purchase a Save the Monarchs kit and support our 4th through 6th graders. You are invited to visit the auction table. Also, you may submit your 2019-2020 pledge in the vestibule near the name board. You can sign up with Betsy Gabriel for the Interfaith Peace Walk on Sunday, April the 28th. At 12 noon, join others to engage the Blue Box, an offering from our excellent Ending Racism Committee, and return tonight at 5 p.m. for one more mindful meditation session with Deborah Cooper. In addition, coming soon is our Seder, the annual auction, and a new mindfulness retreat. Details are in your order of service. Now, we turn our attention to the here and now and to our spirits as we begin our service.
Warm, sunny June day. Suddenly, a swarm of monarch butterflies are overhead. They have spotted a beautiful milkweed garden at USG. The monarchs are tired as they have been flying hundreds of miles from Mexico to find a place to feed and lay their eggs. This bed looks perfect, so they swoop down and start to rest and feed. But the monarchs sense something is wrong. Workmen not too far from the church are digging up the soil and spraying chemicals that smell harsh and caustic. The butterflies flitter in panic, wondering if our garden bed is going to stay safe for them. But wait, to their delight, here come some protesters with signs reading, "Ban pesticides." The protesters talk to the workmen and are so convincing of the dangers of pesticides such as Roundup, that all work is halted. So with the milkweed unharmed, the monarchs are able to rest among the flowers after their long journey.
This is a simple story of the dangers monarch butterflies face, but it is a fact that in the last 20 years, the monarch butterfly population has declined by 90%. And the main cause is the killing off the milkweed flower because farmers and gardeners use pesticides and herbicides. The milkweed flower is the monarch's lifeline. They use it for food, protection, and laying their eggs. During fellowship hour today, we are selling milkweed seedlings for $5 each. Please buy several to plant in your home garden this spring. We can all work together to make our area a stop on the monarch's flight path and hopefully encourage an increase in their population. And with the money from our sale, we will either plant that milkweed garden or plant a tree sapling to replace one felled during a storm. Thank you.
Now hear from Maggie Beaumont on this month's theme, wholeness.
This month, for those of us who are in small group ministry, there have been some exercises, or maybe there are some exercises to come depending on when your group meets. One exercise is to look at our names, how our families and communities have named us, and how we have named ourselves. So in that spirit, my name might be Maggie Ann Beaumont Reed Dews Ford James, but it might also be Joy Finder. And then here are a few others of mine. The church of my childhood named me sinful for being born, second class by reason of my gender, bound to obey my parents in all things, and subject to being hit when I didn't. Earth names me strong and sturdy. Air names me open and reflective. Fire names me passionate and perhaps a bit too self-righteous. Water names me sensitive and given to tears. At different times in my life, my sins have named me selfish, damaged goods, unworthy, wasteful, never going to amount to anything. Sometimes that has seemed pretty true. Most of it doesn't feel true now, or at least only rarely. I've been a recovering perfectionist since about 2008. Before that, I wasn't in recovery. So on a good day, I can be tremendously ethical, reasonably reliable, surprisingly productive. I'm certainly idealistic, and I try hard to be fair, honest, self-disciplined, and orderly, but don't look at my apartment. Sometimes I'm even wise. But I can also be judgmental, inflexible, dogmatic, critical. I pretend I'm not anxious, and I am rarely jealous. That's rarely, not really. My ex would tell you I can be controlling, but I'm sure that's a misinterpretation. I've been, at different times in my life, an adequate engineer, a decent writer, a competent dancer and skier, a dedicated journalist, and a compassionate healer, among a few other things. So personal wholeness means acceptance of all of that, the things I'm proud of, the ones I judge, the ones I'm ashamed of, and the ones other people have complained about. But that's enough about me. What about wholeness and community? Back in 1950s America, which I remember, most business suit jobs belonged exclusively to white men. Backbreaking jobs were left for people whose skin was black or brown, or whose language wasn't English. Childcare was left to women, and wives had no economic freedom. Some folks that are now too young to remember those days imagine that they want to go back there, even though it was never a comfortable place to live. But we know there's no going back. We can't fit our 21st century selves back into the 1950s, even if we did want to, which most of us actually don't. Wholeness as a community requires acceptance of all our parts, young people, old people, middle-aged people, typically able and atypically disabled people, black, red, yellow, brown, white, and any other color people we find, people with advanced degrees and people who never finished grade school and people with college or high school, people with white-collar jobs and people with blue-collar jobs, ministers and engineers, librarians and mechanics, teachers and truck drivers, office folks and barn workers. Community wholeness asks us to pay attention to one another, to listen deeply to the experiences each of us shares, to honor and value each relationship we have in the community. It asks us to make room for each other to change and grow, and to appreciate those changes as they occur, even though most of us like it better when our friends stay predictable. So let me leave you with a question. How will you apply your particular abilities and gifts to the work of building a beloved community that nurtures the wholeness of all?
Cy Powell Emery will next speak on this month's theme.
Good morning. Aging into the wisdom of wholeness. As children, our inner and outer worlds are the same. We are whole and connected to our divine roots, to our souls. We marvel at how children speak their truths without hesitation or shame. My daughter once remarked, "Mommy, that babysitter lady is too fat." "Shh, hush, that's not a nice thing to say," I told her. As we grow up, we are taught by our parents, teachers, friends, and experiences to armor up, to be politically correct, to shield our vulnerabilities, lest they be used against us. We are living divided lives. As adults, who we are in our inner world is rarely shared in our outer world dealings. The adult soul is shy and retreats under the pressures of negative criticism, unsolicited advice, failed ventures, and unrealistic expectations from ourselves and others. Shame, doubt, fear, and judgment influence our actions and the choices we make, often with less than desirable results. Learning to embrace and seek wholeness is the path towards wisdom, or aging wisely. Growing up as the oldest and only girl of four children in a working-class African-American family with strong Southern roots, I was in charge at a young age and actively participated in the family circumstances. Okay, perhaps, yeah, that's how I learned to be just a little bit bossy. My mother nicknamed me Miss Public Defender because I was always coming to the aid of anyone with a problem, especially if they were wrongly accused. I was unconsciously honing my teacher and healer skills with the courage and fearlessness of my youth. Time, travel, and experiences in the world, particularly my educational experiences in medicine, a white male dominant culture, would add layers to my armor so I could protect my soft underbelly of caring and being of help to others. I remember a lesson learned in medical school that I still pass on to my students today. When asked a question that you don't know the answer to, don't say, "I don't know." Say what you do know in relation to the question. You don't want the only time you get the spotlight to be marred by, "I don't know." It takes courage to embrace vulnerability, to walk around or through shame, regret, and pain. When we step up and take down our armor, we open up to personal growth and real connection to others. Parker Palmer, in his book, A Hidden Wholeness, says that living behind a wall or armor has at least three consequences. One, first, our inner light cannot illuminate the work we do in the world. Second, our inner darkness cannot be penetrated by the light that is in the world. And third, people close to us become wary of the gap between our onstage performance and backstage reality. Live behind a wall or armor up, or with your armor up long enough, and the true self you tried to hide from the world disappears from your own view. From last Sunday's quote by Albert Einstein, "The path of awakening is not about becoming who you are. Rather, it is about unbecoming who you are not." This, I believe, is at the heart of aging into wisdom and wholeness. Disarmoring, tearing down self-imposed walls, and courageously sharing one's gifts with the world is not a job for the faint of heart. Yet by reconnecting one's soul with the divine, by seeking wholeness, I believe that we can transcend personality, family, community, and reputation to attain the freedom to be one's authentic self. Thank you.
Speaker on this month's theme is Alan Wendell.
I believe that wholeness has two fundamentally different aspects. The first involves having or working towards physical, mental, and emotional well-being. This is the creation and maintenance of a healthy ego self. The second involves transcending that very same ego self. So we have the creation of self on the one hand and the loss of or transcendence of self on the other. And they are both vital parts of human flourishing. Let's look at the self-creation part for a moment. There are many levels here. At the most mundane, finding a lost favorite object, such as a coffee mug or a photograph, can be a momentary wholeness experience, especially if they have some emotional resonance. Of more significance would be attaining a lost or never before experienced state of mental of physical health. Recovering from a bad cold can make one feel whole. Recovering from a heart attack or emerging from a successful cancer treatment are much bigger wholeness experiences. In the realm of mental and emotional health, all kinds of examples come to mind. Learning how to cope with bullies as a child, or learning how not to be one. Recovering from a divorce, or other relationship failure, entering into a new relationship, mastering a difficult subject or skill in school or work, achieving a fitness goal, experiencing a different culture. These are all wholeness experiences that tend towards the creation of a healthy self. The examples are endless, and they are all important to varying degrees and times in one's life. But this pursuit of a healthy ego self, while vitally important, is somehow, and to my mind paradoxically, not enough. Some people become aware of this early in life, some till not much later, and some never at all. But an interest in self-transcendence may begin to emerge when this awareness dawns. There are many approaches to self-transcendence. Meditation practices, such as those cultivated for millennia by Buddhism and other similar paths, is one. Another is the sacrifice of one's own time and self-interest in the service of others. The practice of deep listening to another individual requires self-transcendence and can also be a form of service to that individual. Full participation in religious ritual involves a loss of self, as does participating in a social group, something larger than oneself, as we say. There is a whole range here also, from project teams at work to social clubs, to strongly identifying with and immersing oneself in, that is, losing oneself, in a particular culture, religion, or a national identity. These two aspects of wholeness, building up and then transcending, are really not separable. Neither can exist without the other. Perfection is not required or even remotely possible, but some degree of mental, physical, and emotional health is necessary for the spiritual practices that lead to self-transcendence. And self-transcendence is necessary for a healthy ego self. I think of the ego self as a kind of springboard from which one may venture into selflessness and then return in a never-ending dynamic of departing and returning. This is just a metaphor, of course. It may be useful, but it cannot fully capture what I am trying to point to. Impermanence is a basic characteristic of reality that permeates both the creation and transcendence of self. A healthy self is never a completed project. You can be emotionally healthy at 20, depressed at 30, and happier than you thought possible at 50. The same applies to self-transcendence. I have had one deep experience in particular, and many smaller ones, of self-transcendence in a meditation practice that I've engaged for many years now. But I've always had to return to my functioning ego self to be with my family and friends and to go to work the next day. And finally, I want to point out that we are all each part of each other's wholeness as well as brokenness. We are infinitely interrelated. The seven UU principles that we have on banners around the sanctuary all point to this in one way or another. And at the end of the day, it is this aspect of wholeness, or holiness really, that I am most interested in. At the end of the day, how did I relate? Did I listen? Was I kind? Did I extend myself? That's the holiness and wholesome wholeness that I care most about now. Thank you.
Our closing words today are from Wendell Berry. Wholeness does not mean perfection. It means embracing brokenness as an integral part of life. Knowing this gives me hope that human wholeness, mine, yours, ours, need not be a utopian dream if we can use devastation as a seed for new life.